Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Joining me on the pilot, actually you have a pilot and a co-pilot, mostly. You know, we are flying the Eagle FM passenger airline here. And if you're a listener, you are a passenger. What?
We will argue about who's co-piloting. Because pilot and co-pilot, co-pilot sounds like a Tom and Jerry situation. Look, who's Tom and who's Jerry?
Look, we don't want to scare the passengers.
You say that it's all about confidence.
Yeah, just
confidence.
Yeah, even if an engine blows off, you just even if an engine blows up, you just tell me, well, nothing to worry about. It's just a little smoke. Little smoke. I can see the engine is on fire. What do you mean, little smoke? But that's the confidence that you find in a lot of pilots. But I totally understand why that's common in the aviation industry. Because once you tell people, guys, I hate to break this to you, but the engine is on fire, and we have a catastrophic failure. You have chaos. You're gonna have chaos in the cabin.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you want, you basically want everyone to calm down so you can focus on solving the problem. Because if there's chaos, you can't focus on solving the problem. But we are not, running an aviation academy. We are just doing the usual home run from 4 o'clock to 6. That's your drive time show extended, obviously. Well, you're welcome. Now, let's talk about another type of dependency here. I know.
Now we extended it, guys. If you didn't know, now you know. Now you
you're
do.
Welcome. We have talked, I think, several times about dependency on a lot of things, dependency on a lot of products and services as Africa. And yesterday or the day before, we did talk about, talk a little bit about our dependency on military security, as a continent. And I think that, this is somewhat an extension the digital sovereignty or digital security is an extension of that military security, because the digital, digital aspect of, digitization is a very important part of pretty much everything, including the military, because that's how you do, your logistics, your communications. Your navigations. Today, it's highly dependent on digital platforms, unlike years of yesteryear when everything was dependent on pretty much everything mechanical. Mm. Now, we are now sitting here talking about, looking at the EU, and this has been going on for a while now. We're looking at the European bloc, especially the Western part. And one thing that you see is that there's a lot of talks and to some degree implementations of shifting from American big tech to their to the alternatives in the name of a digital sovereignty. So that obviously when as an African, when I came across that information, the first thing I asked myself is it's basically a two-part question. Does Africa has an alternative to any of the platforms coming out of big tech USA, or if we don't, if we do, that's a brilliant idea, which I hardly doubt. And if we don't, what are we doing about it?
Now that's where things get interesting, Helmut, because like yesterday's discussion. Remember the founding the article that we based our discussion on yesterday, which was the Villager e-paper article, which we had for this past Monday. About the Namibia importing. No, it was last week Friday. Namibia's particular trade statistics are highlighting that Namibia still depends on established but stable trade lines between Europe, South Africa, China. Now, what does obviously...
Point of correction, Namibia still depended until February.
I use the word rely, Helmut, because do you know what was the interesting thing about our talk yesterday?
Yeah.
Was that, yes, we imported a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Much of the imports consisted of primary sector equipment and products. So we needed obviously equipment and component parts for whatever is happening across the country, from mining to the green hydrogen to the other renewable energy development projects across the country. So you could see literally what these things were. Remember the brackets? Much of them we had to lump them together. And then there was also agriculture that was importing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Remember the fertilizers and the other particular products. So that in itself had to show us, okay, so Namibia bought a lot of stuff to come in. And then predominantly, what did Namibia sell to go out? And we sold a lot of, guess what, uranium and other particular products that we were also exporting to Europe, which was the red meat, which was one or two other agricultural products, which also forms part of agriculture once again. Oh, and fishing, sorry, and fishing. So in essence, those February statistics and trade statistics highlighted the dependence issue that you are indicating towards.
Yeah.
Now, remember I started with the word relied on. You zoomed into a micro situation of there's a dependence issue.
Uh-huh.
So what was the article that our colleague Inamenwa wrote about? Primarily, the hypothesis was we are still in our economic activity exporting raw materials and semi-processed goods out of the country. We are not taking to heart what the UN Conference of Trade and Development's report that was launched in February this year tried to highlight to us. Okay, if you've got the mining sector, build from the extraction. Build value addition components above the extractive activity. Now this then cascades into another conversation, Hamut, which is an interesting conversation because it falls within the ICT realm and the ICT sector of things. Now, what you can look at Namibia as a micro example, you can literally expand this across the whole of Africa. Okay, besides South Africa and Nigeria being the hotspots of cybercrime and cyber scamming, you know, because they don't actually commit cyber crime. They actually commit scamming, cyber scamming activities. For the rest of Africa, we have a big issue, Hamut. Our big issue is we don't understand competition. We understand collaboration as Africans, but we don't understand to compete between each other. Now, what the article in the e-paper on Friday highlighted was Namibia has to strongly think about self-dependency, which is a protectionist approach and a mindset. And everything I'm going to talk about now is protectionism 101.
It's a faith in an institution. That's what's disrupted. If you take, for example, a lot of, big tech, one of the main reasons that the EU is basically pointing at when it comes to their reliance on US big tech is digital sovereignty. That speaks into control. We want to run our system the way that we see fit.
Yeah.
And technology is one of those things. Now, in 1993, the Yinhe incident. This is a Chinese, this was a Yinhe, or turns out it translates to Milky Way, was a cargo ship. I think it was bound for the Middle East out of China. The U.S. Acting on their intelligence, that's what they claimed. They basically pressured.
Yeah, it also goes for the Belgrade embassy bombing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Belgrade part I didn't see.
Was it Belgrade or Sarajevo? Which Chinese embassy?
I think that must have been Belgrade.
Okay.
Sarajevo was just.
Apparently, the Americans still claim they did not know the building was a Chinese embassy.
Oh, of course, they didn't. The thing is, there were basically accusations of the the ship carrying some kind of chemical weapons, and that ship was stranded at sea. Now, apart from basically pressuring all the neighboring, you know, all the countries around the, you know, all the countries around where the ship should have docked, pressuring them, obviously, you're looking at political pressure coming in. What happened was the ship's navigation system, because it was using GPS at the time, which is an American navigation system, it was jammed. So the ship was stranded at sea for, I think, about 24 days, almost a month. That, again, just showed the Chinese, you know what? You have got to, the best way to basically navigate this world, learn to build your own things.
Do you know what's the other example? That we, that
you know what? I think they started a they started something like what they called a U.S. Saudi joint inspection team that they formed to basically inspect to try and find the so-called chemical weapons on board. They didn't find any, but there was.
But who said there was chemical weapons on board?
The U.S. You know, they were acting on intelligence that they. Turned out to be false, because the chemical weapons were not found.
Why does it sound like Iraq?
Well, Iraq was look.
No, it's not for you, remember?
Look, I get it. The reason why you're bringing, you know,
but the chain of thought, you can see the chain of thought, the chain of events.
Look, the reason behind my stutter, behind, you know, minus the natural part, is, you know, every time we talk about Iraq 2003,
yeah.
We forget that the invasion of Iraq, now 2003 was not the first time that Iraq was invaded under false pretense.
Mm.
Yes, of course, 2003 was weapons of mass destruction. But Desert Storm in 1991 was, Iraqi soldiers were pulling babies in Kuwait out of incubators and leaving them to die. That came from a 16-year-old girl's testimony in Congress,
which they discovered was the Kuwaiti Emirati's
Kuwaiti's ambassador.
The Kuwaiti ambassador
daughter to the U.S.
To the U.S. who was living in the U.S.
who the intelligence community prepped up. Look, man, if you are using a 16-year-old to lie
on behalf of a world to commit or to gain,
to basically go to war,
yeah,
I don't think there's a line you are not going to cross to go to war. Unfortunately. Now, I think, look, every time that, now, there are now two incidents that I can look at. One, the 100 years of humiliation. Again, that's a story coming out of China. And the Yinhe incident, a story coming out of China. Both these stories indicate one thing. Build your own thing. So basically, it takes us back to the old adage of, if you want a job well done, do it yourself.
But I wanted to add it onto your introduction there as well. So, when I was now recently in China, we had to sit for a presentation by the local, the Communist Party of China's, what's the city's name? How could I forget that? Province's name is Nanchang. Yeah, the city's name is Nanchang. The local branches, they've got a professor in the local political structure there in Nanchang. And the professor explained to us in the presentation that one of the things that the province of Jiangxi realized, because each province, and this is the same thing that actually made me a little bit envious, but I was warned last night because I had the similar conversation. Like I told you, I've got someone that studied political science at home.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come with an idea, that idea quickly gets watered down just to say, listen, don't stop trying to compare Africans to other places where you as an African has gone to.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I saying this? Because I sat there listening to this presentation that this professor gave. He's probably like 2 years younger than me. He does look younger than us, Helmut, unfortunately, even you included.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So
I've run into a few of those.
So he explained that China decided to build its own aircraft. Its own aircraft. Now, I forgot the aircraft brand's name, but I think they're like two of them. Why did they do this? Because in the 90s, when China invited European and American engineers and scientists, aeronautic scientists and aeronautic engineers, to come and help with teaching, skills development, capacity development, all those things that Namibia is now trying to seek and doing under the Green Hydrogen Program, the Europeans and Americans were telling them, you pay, when we send this guy to you,
mm-hmm.
you pay this sum of money, this premium.
Yeah.
Not just for the person we're sending to you, but also for the knowledge that that person is going to carry over to you. Now, that is still ongoing on the African continent and even in Namibia, Hamoud. I've heard stories where, for example, the mine unions know this as well, but they can't do anything technically because this is the internal structures that comes through from the parent company
yeah.
of the mining company.
Yeah.
So I heard once, it was one of the companies that owned Rospina, not the current owners, but one of the companies that owned Rospina. It was an Australian company. They brought in engineers, Helmut, from Australia that were on the Australian, that were on the global pay scale. And a Namibian engineer hired from Namibia, working at the mine, was earning under Namibian standards. So you are earning, Helmut, as an engineer at the mine, mm-hmm. you are earning 30,000 Namibian dollars a month before taxes and before other deductions. Whereas the guy that's flown in from Australia is earning 150,000 Namibian dollars before deductions and taxes. Let me say it again. Do you see the disparity? But it's because you are hired out of Namibia
yeah.
to work in Namibia. That guy is flown in from Australia to come and work in Namibia, and he's on their global salary package situation. Now, some Namibians didn't understand this, but I immediately understood it because if you look at it in terms of what multinationals do, the Japanese do it. The Chinese are doing it now. They're just following in the footsteps of, you know, what the template that other people have done. For example, when my elder sibling worked in South Africa, and she worked at Sony South Africa, all the top structures in Sony South Africa, all top structures, were Japanese.
Your execs.
All senior managers mm-hmm. were Japanese. From the head of the company to, like, if you're like the ordinary worker here, now you've got your team supervisor and your division head.
Mm.
The guy above the division head is Japanese. None of them are women. So obviously they come with their company culture, with their national culture. They even export it to, you know, another country.
Yeah.
Now these are the confusing templates, Hamoud, that we as Africans are seeing. So are we looking to an Asian template? Are we looking to a European template? Are we looking to a North American template? What are we looking at? Because Namibia then is trying to balance all these things of we must have zebra-style employment structures. Now, if we're a bunch of welders, but four of us are men, and we really want to hire women, but the women can't weld yet,
mm-hmm.
what are we going to do? Now the Labour Commission wants to come and ask, what's that part of the Labour Commission? Yeah. The Labour Commission now wants to come and interview. Let's say I'm the company owner
yeah.
of welding.
Yeah.
But we're just men. Because it's a particular practice, a particular profession that's dominated by men.
Yeah.
Because you're out in the sun the whole day. Now we're just a bunch of men. Now the Labour Commissioner comes and asks me, the company owner, yeah, Dwight, why do you just have men? You're working against the nation's affirmative action or economic, labor development, human capital development, and economic prospects because you've hired no women. But here's the thing. My wife then becomes the office manager, runs the whole bookkeeping and financial structures and employment, everything. So why would I need to hire more women? If I'm going to hire more women, Hamoud, then I'm going to appoint daughters and my camaradas and my side chicks and everyone else, because I'm going to give them the opportunities, right?
That's a bad idea.
Not really, but you know, you can manage things. You can manage things. So you'll do that. But then you get dragged to ACC for your private enterprise because Namibians don't understand. A private enterprise, you can do whatever you want as long as you abide by the laws. And with a public enterprise, you have to follow the policies and regulations in place specifically about combating unemployment and all that. You have to follow that. So now we sit with confusing scenarios. Do you do an African, is there an African philosophy behind developing a business? Or are we trying to borrow from systems that we are being influenced by?
Okay, there's a, you know, the example of welding and the, you know, the inclusivity of women in that industry.
Yeah.
There's one thing that, you know, I think we must just start facing the reality of. There are spaces in terms of disciplines that are dominated by women, and there are those that are dominated by men. And
teaching has become one of those spaces.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Jordan Peterson, the Canadian psychologist, you know, explains it, this in a way that I find very fascinating. That one of the main differences between men and women is that men care about things, women care about people, which is why the disciplines that disciplines that have to do with caring for people, they're dominated by women. Disciplines that have to do with caring for things, they're dominated by men. Construction industry, extractive industry. And now, take for example, if you are going to include women into, you know, it will be borderline, you know, it will be really hard, if not borderline impossible, for you to achieve a 50-50 split in terms of employing, take for example, the male to female ratio in the construction industry.
Mm.
It's heavy labor. It's just not made for women. Now, yep. This is the debate that started, I think, that ran. I'm not sure if it's still running now, but especially in the American military space. Should women be part of the special forces? Now, the question then,
it was also the deployment jokes. Remember the memes about deployment?
Yeah, at the front line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should women be included in this space? But then they looked at one thing. The training these guys that are in the Special Forces Division go through, no women have made it through unless you have to downgrade that training quality, which will then mean you are putting someone in harm's way.
Yep.
Yeah, because they will be in spaces where no one will look at them and say, you know what, well, this is a woman, I'll just shoot her, you know, in the leg with a pistol. No. Now, if you downgrade the training quality, you're going to get them killed.
Yep.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? You'll just get them killed so that you can get your idea of equality. There are disciplines that will be dominated by women. Psychology is one of them. Nursing is one of those. It's just the world over. Now, there are disciplines that will always be dominated by men. Construction is one of those. Everything that has to do with heavy labor, think agriculture, heavy lifting, they are dominated by men. That boils down to our biological difference of men having a stronger bone density and more muscles, literally, than women. It's biology. There's nothing you can do about it.
Definitely.
That example that you gave about, the example that you gave about, once it becomes a governance issues that, you know what, you must have, this male to female ratio in your company. First, you may want to find out, what does my company do?
No, you will know. You as the company owner will know.
Exactly.
But you will obviously look, Hamut, and this is the thing sometimes that confuses the discussion. I'm not talking about our discussion, the discussions that you sometimes hear outside or that you sometimes see. Now you get dragged. Let's say you own that welding business.
Yeah.
Now you get dragged by someone comes and complains, Helmut or Dwight's company doesn't employ women. Dwight's wife is the finance manager. Helmut's wife is the HR manager. What's going on here? Why does this look like in Afrikaans we say complot story?
It's a private company.
But this looks like corruption. Like an accusation. You remember the conversation I had yesterday on the work group with Matthias about how you try to look at the role of investors and labor relations in Namibia. I won't mention names. I already did, technically, but it was a pretty public discussion, where the conversation was, he tried to connect the salary scale of a worker in a retail shop,
mm-hmm.
And he cited $700 million to the government officials that are inviting and having these fancy, publicity or public relations activities to showcase investors being interested in Namibia and taking them all across Namibia, showing them all these wonderful positives that Namibia can offer and so on and so forth, and ask the media that, we go and obviously cover what's new here. But here's the question, Hamut. How do you connect the price you agree to as an employee to, let's for example say NIPDB showcasing an investor, a potential investor to the Namibian public through media activities? How do you connect those two things? What does it have to do with each other? Now, when you ask such a particular fundamental question, here's what many labor consultants will tell you. Helmut, did you negotiate for your price? Or did you just say yes?
Have you seen the unemployment statistics?
The ones that you and I were sweating about, was it last year or the year before?
Look, it's very simple math. Before you ask questions like, did you negotiate your... Ask, just look at the unemployment numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you know that chances are very high. Someone just said, ooh, one heck of a relief after, you know, I graduated 4 years ago and I've been sitting at home without a job. This will be a relief. Now, you know, this is where now you begin to see this collision between governance. And for the most part, a lot of people that are in governance, in governing positions, 90% of the time, unfortunately, and this is the world over, they are doing things for optics, or they made what Mr. Sheban calls expensive promises they want to keep up with.
Exactly.
And or they just made someone a promise and optics. And this has been happening in politics for a very long time. In 1986. What's one of the reasons why the challenger, the challenger disaster happened?
Challenger was
1986, NASA.
Oh,
yeah,
oh.
The disaster where they had even a science teacher on board.
Wasn't the one where the pre-launch, the climatic conditions?
It's that one. The thing is, there were two engineers that told NASA, and now you have to understand that these two engineers designed the rocket that exploded. Yeah. These guys are experts at what they do. They told NASA and basically everyone involved that, don't do this. The temperature this morning is way too cold for those seals to close off to work properly.
Yeah.
So delay it
the launch
for the temperature to rise a bit.
Yeah.
Delay or postpone. But the thing is, they have promised the whole country. They promised the schools that at this time the launch is happening, and all the kids were set down in classes to witness the launch live. Mm. So you are talking about 50 states. Schools across 50 states.
Yeah.
And you have also promised, Ronald Reagan was the president at the time.
Mm.
He now have to, you know, everything is well connected with the president's speech and the launch and everything. So they said, no, well, you can't postpone it. They ignored the warning of two experts who were literally, these are the guys that designed the rocket.
Mm.
They ignored their point of view. They ignored their expert advice on account of someone who is sitting in a political office that doesn't understand a thing about rocket science.
But it was also their boss. Not their boss. It was their boss.
There's a company they worked for. Is it Martin Thiokol or something?
Yeah. No. It was the boss who of the company. He didn't want to sort of like step on the toes of the NASA leadership at the time. Because... What was the guy that did the interview? The one engineer, he literally said, the discussion here was, the rubber band or the type of band that they used as a sealing, because it sealed in a specific gas that they used.
Yeah.
The band,
that hydrogen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, they use hydrogen rockets.
Yep.
Yes. So
one single...
that little thing, that little rubber band, or those rubber bands that they used.
Yeah.
It was a question of the moment you instantly heat it up,
yeah,
the rubber band literally disintegrates because it was frozen solid.
Yeah, but when it's too frozen, it becomes brittle.
Yeah, because it literally breaks and then...
basically stuff starts leaking, yeah. Andy. You don't want hydrogen to leak.
And you see fireworks in the sky. So that was, if you guys don't know, that was what actually happened with the Challenger series.
After that thing exploded.
Say it's one of the reasons why we never went back to the moon after Artemis. Before Artemis. Artemis that recently landed.
Look at it this way. the capsule where the astronauts, including the science teacher, were housed, that thing was falling.
They sent up a science teacher.
Yeah. She was supposed to be the first, you know, science teacher in space. You know, the whole record thing.
Oh.
That thing was falling at about 200 kilometers an hour.
That's fast, Hamad.
Yeah. And it hit, yeah, it landed in the ocean, but at that speed, the water is going to feel like a wall.
Mm.
Now, you can only imagine what they found in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A sheet of metal.
All they had to do was listen to the experts.
Yeah. Two engineers who said...
Two engineers who designed the whole thing.
Just wait. Just wait a little bit later into the day.
Yep. What were they chasing? Those guys, you're basically everyone on top of the, of the power structure that ignored the advice.
Mm.
Optics.
Yeah.
In the name of optics.
Public relations, optics, good publicity.
Well,
national prestige.
Now,
you can name them
okay,
all.
Just do a comparison here. Postponing and explosion. Which one would have been better at optics?
Postponing.
Postponing would have been better at optics.
The explosion is the better at optics.
The explosion?
Yeah.
But that's way too negative in comparison.
That's literally what tabloids and news media want.
That's
they wanted kaboom. Why are we sending people up in these?
But people are dead, guys.
Why are we sending people up in the same mechanisms or technology that powers nuclear warheads around the world?
Well, look, the thing is, now my point is, unfortunately, that is what you begin to see even to this day. Warnings and, experts are pushed aside on specific subjects. And we saw this even during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm.
People were listening to Bill Gates' idea.
Oh, now Bill Gates is...
And leaving medical, medical experts on the subject. No one was listening to medical, experts. They were pushed aside and everyone started listening. He's a billionaire, but he's not a medical expert.
Do you know what's the worst part? Now, poor Bill Gates, Helmut. Apparently, there is a theory popping up from the Epstein files.
Oh, of course it's going to be.
He and Epstein apparently were the masterminds of the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know. I'm too afraid. I can go and download those files now, but 3,000 files is too much for my service provider. My internet will be done in like a minute and a half.
The files that's been released, which is I think they said is just about 3 or 10%.
It's the 50%. 3,000.
3,000?
There's 3,000 other files that have not been released. It's most the other files that they're most busy hammering about still today.
Look, the painful thing about this is, if there's one thing that the Epstein file thing is, is going to prove, is that if you have money, you can get away with anything.
So far?
Yeah.
Well, as long as you also supposedly, according to the theory, that Iran is popping up, because the Iranians is now calling Trump the head of the Epstein administration.
Definitely not. Now,
Iran knows how to troll. Ne?
Have you seen them? Wait.
The Lego music video.
Oh, yeah.
That thing is classic.
Now, the thing is, you have experts. Sometimes, when you have experts on the ground,
yeah.
Mostly experts are, looked down on. But these are the people that actually we should all listen to.
Yeah.
More often in the name of optics, we ignore expert advice and again more often ends up in disaster like the Challenger disaster.
Yeah. But we are way off topic now already.
Now, the reason why I'm pointing that out, let me take you back to where I basically took us off, way off topic. The welding example that you just used. When you're coming to tell me that I must employ more women in my, logging,
in your lumberjack field.
Thank you. My lumberjack field. I must employ more women.
Yeah. Why not?
Yes, I can. If they are applying.
But you've got my safety and security, what they call it? What's that thing that my younger brother...
Look, man,
occupational health and safety. You have to get that.
Do this experiment. Before there were forklifts, people were offloading, bags of, everything the truck is having using manpower. Now, this is not you excluding women. Now, if they are not coming, what are you going to do? Are you just going to have, three open positions for an infinite time period because you are waiting for one or two women to apply? You'll of course fill them up with men because those are the ones that are going to show up.
Yeah.
If they show up, if they show up, you recruit them. If they don't, what do?
You put those vacancies on ice, Helmut.
And wait
until women who are big enough, strong enough. Yeah.
What does that do to your business?
I don't know. What it does is that it puts a strain on the existing workforce.
Exactly.
To achieve the daily tasks, or the daily quota of tasks. Uh-huh.
Which you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. And the moment you overwork is the moment you will have a higher frequency of workforce trying to take leave because they need to recuperate, rest, then come back. And then go full swing into things. So marginal utility, which is just that one exercise in microeconomics that we learned, which I forgot how it worked. But it was about finding the best balance between having the adequate number of labor versus the adequate amount.
The amount of labor being carried out.
Of the labor demand.
Yeah.
So if you match them up, and does it impact your return on investment, meaning the amount of money that you make from completing these tasks. Now, everything looks well in terms of a mathematical equation.
Except
what happens in reality is a totally different thing.
Because we are busy playing politics.
Not really.
For the most part.
Not really, Amut. I have a slight issue also with economics. After being exposed to economics for so long, and listening to Richard Murphy and Steve Keane, one is from Sheffield, the other one is from Australia, and listening to them, is that obviously they explain something from an advanced economy position.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look from a Namibian economic position, you realize there are so many deficiencies that you can't even fathom of being on the level, potentially, even of a failing state like England. Just England, not Wales, not Scotland, just England. A failing state like England, because
100 years ago, no one would believe you for saying that.
Exactly. And I'm not saying failing state because of governance. I'm saying failing state because of their economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it still has its resilience factor because the resilience comes from a consumption base.
Yeah.
But we in Namibia, we are not measuring consumption.
Oh.
We're not saying because we've created so many new jobs, we've brought in so much new money, so many new retail shops can open up. Namibians can open up MSMEs, XYZs, so forth. And you can start, connecting the dots. We can't even compare ourselves to a German template, Helmut, because when I told you about that micro enterprise that has 50,000 employees and the small enterprise that has 162,000 employees. Let me say it again. A micro has 52,000.
First of all, why are you comparing us to Germany?
I'm just saying, Helmut, we will never get there. We will never get there.
We will. I see us getting there just 2 days after Jesus' arrival.
And Jesus' second arrival.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Second.
Second arrival. Now, look, the thing is, everything that we are going to do, if we are going to talk about dependency, unfortunately, we keep circling back to square one.
Mm.
You are going to need what you just pointed out, data.
We're going to need the data.
Everything is going to revolve around data, because before you solve a problem, you first have to identify the problem and find out the cause of that problem. And for you to get all that, you need information.
Hamoud, it's not rocket science. You need data interoperability, which we spoke about. But here's the thing, the silos. So the dependency discussion is about, how do we balance things? So our discussion obviously shows what Europe is now quietly,
slowly,
but publicly achieving.
Yeah.
I mean, when you shared the article of the French, French government's, what's this ministry's name, Helmut? What is this ministry's name? I had to look up the name again because I was like, where did Helmut stumble upon this ministry?
I had to translate that. Digital technology. There are two individuals that you find at the bottom of the page. One is the minister.
No, the two ministers.
Yeah. The one is a minister delegate in charge of artificial intelligence and digital, and the other, the gentleman on top, is the minister of action and public accounts.
Yeah.
And they both really do talk about a lot of a lot about why France and basically the EU overall should move away from, or more like the idea behind their transition or their move away from US big tech to basically, you know, alternatives that, helps them accomplish their goal of digital sovereignty.
But did you see that the first minister, because now my browser here on my phone doesn't want to automatically translate the whole page.
Yeah.
The first minister, David Amiel.
Yeah.
The first guy is of, I think, of public accounts or public something.
The first one is that's the action and public accounts. Yeah.
Yeah, action and public. And then the second minister is the lady, Anne Lehanenf.
I won't even attempt that.
Of the AI and computer, right?
Digital, artificial intelligence and digital.
Yeah. So the two ministers came out and said, we're going to achieve this particular e-governance commitment to protecting France's, the government of France's own particular e-governance infrastructure, moving away from what Windows is trying to do. Guess where they're going, guys? Dear listeners, guess where they are going.
That's my favorite part.
You know, there's a Finnish guy who's smiling from ear to ear. You know, there's a meme of him, Helmut, of Linus Torschwald.
Yeah.
That's the guy's name.
Yeah.
There's a meme of Linus. So they put Steve Jobs, the engineer that built Steve Jobs' whole Apple empire.
Yeah.
And then the product. And then they put Bill Gates, the engineer that built the whole Microsoft empire.
Yeah.
And then the product. And when it comes to Linux, you've got Linus, and Linux.
On both engineer and product.
I mean, it was a classic meme, obviously, but...
Seriously?
But the aim, when I did... I don't have the textbook anymore, but when I bought a textbook that we needed to do the basic computing skills and, skills situation in 2003 on university, we had to buy this textbook. This textbook's name, Helmut, literally followed the subject's name. Principles of Information Systems was its name, PIS. The textbook, Helmut, outlined that back then, Linux systems were designed as a complete opposite of Microsoft, of Windows.
In what way?
First and foremost, the first thing that any IT person will tell you who knows their stuff, who really knows their stuff, will tell you Linux does not take up as much hard drive space or your drive, your operating system space, than Windows does.
Yeah, it's not. Linux is not system demanding.
Yeah.
In terms of hardware.
It is also not energy demanding, meaning it doesn't need a lot of electricity to run a lot of ton of functions that you probably will never use in your life.
Yeah. Is it because it doesn't have a lot of background activity?
That too. Windows must love throwing you with functions that you will never use, Helmut. You will just use if you have a word processor. Mm-hmm. Because I'm someone that uses the Google suite of things. Mm-hmm. Google Docs, Google Sheets. I use everything Google because it doesn't save space. It doesn't take space from my physical PC.
Yeah.
But then Windows tries to sell you something and they try to sell you the same idea. But I have Windows. I have the physical machine. Why must my documents and stuff be saved somewhere on the cloud?
Yeah.
Why would I need to pay for that? So I'd rather pay the $1 fee, which is $40, or no, it's $2, which is like $40 a month, to Google. Mm-hmm. Why must I pay, was it $20 a year for the Microsoft Office, the cloud features?
Jeez.
Well, it's ridiculous, Helmut. I'd rather pay the $2 per month still add up to $24, but still. Microsoft obviously tells you, for the whole year up until this date, please don't forget your date. But reminding yourself every month is a lot easier than please don't forget your date at the end of the year.
And also has to do with the stress that it puts, Microsoft, the stress that it puts on the physical hardware. Basically, yeah, basically on your computer hardware.
Yeah. Now, imagine the scenario, Helmut. What Linux does, the basic functions of an operating system, it sorts out your machine talking to your keyboard, talking to your mouse, talking to your speakers, you accessing your necessary folders. If you want to have all the fancy and funky wallpapers on your screen, your monitor in front of you,
mm-hmm.
it does everything. You can even run design programs on Linux as long as the operating system is not the bulk of your storage and of your RAM. What is most important when you buy a PC is you have to look at your processor, the strength of your processor, or the capability of the processor, your RAM, which is your random access memory, and the size of your storage.
Yeah.
What many people forget is, Helmut, they would come here with 1 terabyte worth of data and information on an external hard drive now, or an external drive, and then they want to dump 1 terabyte on 512 gigabytes. I'll say it again. They wish to impose 1 terabyte worth of data on a drive that's the size of 500 gig.
You're going to need extra, 500 more gigs.
Exactly. So one of the most important things now has been that the technologies have moved so fast. The PCs, the laptops have been designed thinner, smaller, meaning the technology changed.
Yeah.
Because now the new technology, solid-state drives, it literally looks like a RAM stick, Helmut. It's about this big. This is a solid-state drive.
So that's your new hard drive.
Yeah. And it's as thin as a paper. That's your new hard drive. And even to say hard drive for a solid-state drive is incorrect.
Yeah.
Because the actual drive is a chip the size of your SIM card. Now, with France moving its whole e-governance structure potentially to Linux, which it said it will do, they realized, firstly, you ring-fence yourself. You ring-fence yourself, Helmut. The second scenario is, obviously, France is most... In a way, France is like having the brother, Helmut. If you say, I like yellow things, that brother of yours says, I like everything red. And then they try to, then they say, nah, I don't believe in anything you say, Helmut. Red is the way
to go. Red is the way to go, yeah.
Yeah, it's that kind of a sibling rivalry situation. So France, in essence, is immediately opposed to anything English-speaking. So that means American and British. They literally are. You'll even see it like in their political, the remarks that the politicians make, like the British politicians. They'll make a weird remark, a snide remark towards the French. Yeah, we still don't forgive the French for Agincourt. And you're like, as an African, you're like, Agincourt?
When was that?
That was 800 years ago. You're not even nobility to talk about Agincourt. Why would you think about Agincourt?
You know, it's my favorite when it comes to that point of view. They won't forgive each other for what happened 800 years ago, but forget transatlantic slavery.
Convenient.
Really?
I'm actually enjoying what the Caribbean countries, because it was the Caribbeans that started with King Charles when he went on his first official business in last year when they went to Samoa, to Apia.
Yeah.
And do you know what the Caribbeans did? Remember, I sent you the article. So the Caribbean nations, the discussions they're done with the official, ceremonies and stuff. And then the Caribbean heads of state were like, okay, King Charles, so this thing about slavery, we are most not actually, what they told him, us, the people that now live in the Caribbean, we're not indigenous to the area. You brought us there. Your country's people brought us there. Your ancestors brought us there.
Yeah.
King Charles is like, nah, Owens, any claims of reparations for slavers, for the slave trade, could potentially bankrupt my country and stuff like that. Yes, it will, Helmut.
Oh, he was not wrong on that one.
No, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. That's why you could literally see with the vote that happened back in March, on, was it 25 or 26 March, the vote in the General Assembly. That's why you could see it brings up not just the UK, it brings up France's particular history, France and Haiti.
Mm-hmm. Oh, France is going broke just for Haiti.
Just for Haiti.
Yep.
And for them and the Americans for meddling in Haiti's business since 1993. Jean, what's the guy's name? Jean-Paul Aristide, the president that was killed, the Haitian president. Because he started most with the whole, I'm going to use the word woke, because in America and the UK, the word woke has been misconstrued. The term is technically being aware of something you were not aware of. Now, he started a whole awareness campaign as a president in Haiti by saying, why are we paying money to France
when they are the ones that enslaved us? We're just fighting for our freedom.
No, for independence.
Yeah.
They got the independence.
Yeah.
But the French imposed on that newly formed infant government of Haiti in the 1800s a reparations agreement, meaning the Haitians had to pay reparations, and they are still paying that money.
Okay, here's the...
Into perpetuity, Helmut. They are still paying this money to France.
I thought they paid it off already.
No! No! They're still paying this money.
Okay, you know what? If you want...
Hence the reason... Okay, first finish your sentence.
If you want a reparation from France, just find out which companies, you know, were running the show behind the politicians. And that's one thing that we often leave out every time that we talk about reparation. And one institution that will pop up every now and then, Citibank. They played one heck of a, you know...
Citibank, is it an American?
That's why, hence the France-America collabo on Haiti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, on this, on this whole plan coming out of the French, government of transitioning, especially, you know, public utility workstations, you know, more like public workstations, like every computer that's used in, in public office, to transition from Windows. And these are plans that they're making to transition from Windows to Linux. They did not specify which distros because Linux is a whole menu that you can pick from.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, Linux is an open source, so security is more guaranteed compared to, well, Windows. And now, the thing about the reason why a lot of people don't like, or more like have never maybe even heard of Linux, is because of how you use it. It has a very wildly different way of it's a little bit of a learning curve. You know, it's something that you'll master with time, but you also, Windows, for example, has a CMD. When last, dear listeners, I'll just ask yourself one question.
CMD is command.
Command prompt. When last did you just try to open a document using command prompt? Yeah. I won't be surprised if someone tells me that I ran into someone that doesn't even know what command prompt is. But for the most part,
are you talking about MS-DOS?
No, command prompt, CMD. Basically,
because I know MS-DOS was command prompt, the black screen with the green script.
That's
MS-DOS, Hammer.
It's command prompt. When was it MS-DOS?
Microsoft DOS. That's what Windows began on. MS-DOS.
But why did we transition from that to mouse?
Because you want a wallpaper. Don't you see that lovely wallpaper in front? You want to see the Solaya with the ads on it, Hamid. You want to look, you want to sound fancy. So that's why the what's the thing's name? What's the discipline that the IT guys learn, the technicians? That's why they developed user interface, UI. So they developed user interface because now you need to improve from going from there.
Yeah.
From writing words, please, Windows, give me this.
Yeah.
Go retrieve this file.
Yeah.
Do this. Because it was boring because you had to write and then hit enter.
Yeah.
Write and hit to see. Now, what's easier? You are using a cursor just to click and select.
Now, I have one question. Picture the African continent, right? You know, or just Namibia,
Ask which Africans know about MS-DOS.
Now, your parliamentarians running Linux. Just picture your parliamentarians.
Hey, Helmut. Do you know what's one of the tricks that happens in our National Assembly?
Look, I'm just saying that would be cool to watch.
Do you know what tricks happen in the National Assembly?
Well,
so when one of the opposition party leaders get up there to make a point of It's usually an objection or a counter argument that they wish to suggest. Then they get up, and now you've got to press a button here in front of you into the intercom system. So if you're at home watching the live feed of the parliamentary sessions,
yeah,
so that you can hear them. Now, sometimes what happens when they press the button, there's a technician that sometimes switches off the button.
Why?
Now, how the system works in National Assembly, when you bring up when you wish to object to a statement made by another political party member, you say point of correction or point of order. In South Africa, I think they say point of order.
Yeah.
And I think here in Namibia, they also use the phrase point of order. But you have to say it to the speaker. The speaker then intervenes or stops the other person in midway in their speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then you make your point of order. You put up your
counter. Like your interjection.
Yeah, your interjection or your counter argument. So sometimes a technician switches off and you sometimes see it. The light is green there, and then they switch it off. It gets to red.
Yeah.
And then you hear the opposition party leaders go like, look, look, look. The official switched off my mic. So asking them what MS-DOS is, or asking them anything about, rudimentary sort of command-based computing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's foundational. The
thing is, when you are talking about switching from Windows, for example, to, from Windows to Linux, it's not just an operating system that you are going to switch. There are a lot of, applications that you also have to switch. For two of the guys that I know that, that run Linux, one of them uses LibreOffice instead of Microsoft Office, which is, it has a lot of features. Like it's very, it's very customizable.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, it have sent my head down in, spiraling in confusion several times. Like, because I'm very accustomed to, to using Microsoft Word, where the tabs are there. You're basically, I've been working with, with Microsoft Word since high school.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I know my way around Microsoft Word. So when I was introduced to LibreOffice, it was a whole of a learning curve. I know how to copy and paste and, justify or more like, picture and edit the picture, in different platforms, whether it's Office or presentation or Excel. You know how to do all these things.
Yeah.
Now, if you have to shift, for example, from Microsoft Office to Office Libre, that's going to require a whole way of learning how to do things. The very same work that you do in Microsoft to Office Libre.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't want to use Office Libre, then you will just have to find out if the distros that you are using supports Microsoft Office. And now there are a lot of things that you basically that you have to consider, but the EU here is stuck in is sandwiched between China and the US the same way that it is geographically, because the world of software is predominantly, in terms of global use, is predominantly dominated by the Americans. Most of the softwares are coming out of there, but the world of hardware is predominantly dominated by dominated by the Chinese, because you have to mine all these things and then make them into chips, and China is basically spread all across the supply chain, from where the mineral that's being used to make a computer chip is mined out of the ground to the physical final product, which is a chip that's made. They are everywhere. So the hardware aspect of tech is dominated by China. Mm. The software aspect of tech is dominated by mostly the US. And I actually don't say the US, just say Israel, because Israel has a tech, more like a cyber, software division. And are they good at it.
But it seems now, Hamid, from what you and I, what we collected from the literature we've got. So, remember the dashboard that I sent you?
Mm.
The one that shows the alternatives to every single mainstream American technology.
The EU is not joking.
The EU is... Guys. I even looked up something now, Helmut.
The EU is not joking.
I quickly did a Google search now of the particular activity that you and I like doing, which is video gaming, playing video games, specifically the ones on the internet.
Online.
You know, online-based. And I looked up how many games are now compatible with Linux, because the requirements usually is when you try to play games on PCs, guys, and I'm not talking about I'm actually hating now on anyone who talks about Xbox and PlayStation. You know, you guys are not real gamers. Just saying that out loud. Yes, I know I'm a 40-year-old man who's actually telling you you're not a real gamer because you haven't migrated over to PC. The experience is way more immersed and way better. Helmut, I'm not gonna punch down yet on you.
Don't.
You and your tablet. You know, I'm still gonna have mercy. However, when it comes to the computer scenario or computer games based scenario, the consumer there, Helmut, has to go and read whether the product that they wish to play or buy is compatible with the hardware requirements that they've got, or the hardware, the current situation of hardware that they've got, meaning. What is the minimum requirement allowed for a CPU, central processing unit, your CPU?
For the operating system you want to adopt.
For your RAM, random access memory, for the amount of storage required to save the game files on your computer, as well as also the level of your graphics processing capability. So it all hinges literally on the CPU to run commands from the RAM, and on your graphics processing unit to execute the rendering of graphics from the game. Because it's literally, imagine the rendering graphics game. Like, I'm now asking you, please. Okay, think about it like what AI is now doing. You tell AI, please think up an image for me. You think up an image, you describe it to the AI. The AI just smashes it together. You didn't even give the AI any ingredients. You just wrote a command to the AI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's literally what your graphics card does in a game for a computer. That's what your graphics card does, your GPU. It literally... But here's the thing. The game developer gave the recipe with the ingredients. It's for the graphics card to literally render. You know, to mix, to take the recipe, take the ingredients, render them together for you to experience the same product that I've been experiencing with my graphics card. But you might have a slightly smaller or slightly bigger, and I would have a slightly smaller, slightly bigger graphics card. Your CPU might be different. Mine might be different. So it's about trying to achieve this equilibrium of consumer experience between two different consumers who have two different hardware setups. But if you go talk to the PlayStation and the Xbox guys, they experience the exact kind of experience, Hamad, regardless of the brands of the consoles that they played it on, regardless. Now imagine the scenario. Now you come to the gaming realm for computers, and a design the Google search I quickly dig about how many games computer games can now support Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Valve, the company that owns Steam, the particular platform, the merchant or the commercial platform through which you can buy games, computer games, Valve literally went and said, we're going to develop a particular tool that makes a computer game that a customer buys on Steam compatible with any Linux operating system that the person has. Because remember...
To keep up with the market?
Yes. Because you get Linux Ubuntu, there's Linux Arc or Arch. There's a bigger one. There's like a big OS.
Yeah, you have my favorite. You have my favorite Kali, which I was told you're just walking around with a toolbox of which 90% of the tools in that toolbox you have no idea what they do. Like, dude, you don't have to be that mean.
There's a friend I've got here in Vantuk. He technically went and tried to design. You know, like 3D design. Some of the tools in the Linux he's got, he can design 3D. He can do 3D design like what's the thing's name? The like CAD.
Computer aided drawing.
CAD, which is the competitor of Adobe. you know, of design tools. Now, CAD is used for architectural planning and construction planning and industrial design and all that, while Adobe is more for media and interactive media and multimedia. Yeah. Now, apparently Linux has got something, a tool like that, built into it. You don't buy a separate thing.
Just one.
It's there. But it depends on the Linux that you go for.
Yeah, you know, the way it was explained to me was that the reason why he made that very mean joke is my cousin. So the reason why he made that mean joke is because Kali is a distro of Linux, which is mostly associated with cybersecurity guys, because it comes with a lot of network like penetration testing tools. Now this is basically a distro of Linux that is mostly preferred for basically designed for hacking. It comes with a lot of hacking tools.
And now, just last week when I said literally they teach the guys on universities how to hack.
Teaching these things at school is not much of a big deal these days because, it's either you have to teach it at school or people are going to find it on YouTube.
Or inadvertently experience it.
It's either experience it or you will find one guy that I follow on TikTok, a huge fan of the guy. His whole account is dedicated to one thing, lock picking.
Yeah, how much?
Yeah, so you can find this information on the internet, which is why it's actually, I totally agree with the point of view that as much as it's contrary to African ways of raising children, have sex education with your children, because it's either you explain it to them or they will find it on YouTube. And believe me, you don't want Google to explain it to them. You want to explain it to them, because the way Google will explain it.
Almut.
Google will dramatize them. Explain it to them yourself.
Oh my goodness.
Unless you have money for therapy, explain it to them yourself.
I think I'm going to get, I need therapy after what, this first 10 minutes past 5, but yeah.
The transition may be one heck of a learning curve, but also you have to factor in different apps that you'll be running on that operating system, because not all the apps that runs on Windows are going to be compatible with Linux. Now here's the thing though. The main question here is, about 2-3 years ago, China was banning a lot of American hardwares out of their public space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And America has been known of doing the exact same thing, banning a foreign hardware from there, especially the public space. And, it's been more about hardware for a very long time. And also low key, even though it was mostly associated to social media, the softwares did not really make a significant part of it, but unless you look at it in terms of social media, which is why you have countries like China, they have different social media platforms than what's used by most parts of the Western world and countries that have Western influence, of which the category of which you fall under. Now, the questions that raises is especially for the EU, because we are trying to, at least for Africa, we're trying to look at the EU and say, okay, how are they going to navigate these waters? And should we follow suit, or should we just be okay with whatever it is associated with digital sovereignty that the EU would like to achieve? And we have a very strong relationship in terms of trade and diplomacy with the EU. So that means everything that they are going to adopt, sooner or later, we will have to interact with them. Now, when you are sending your document or whatever it is that you are sending to the EU, you are operating, it's either Mac to window or window to Mac, or Mac to Mac or window to window. Seems like if this is implemented, especially in France, someone will be telling you, when you ask someone to send you their email address, more often you are expecting to see gmail.com at the end. Now, if they change that too, you are looking at a whole different platform.
Oh, Helmut, I saw here, I counted here like four. Where's that?
Alternatives.
Yeah, the alternatives that I shared with you. I counted like, my goodness, And none of them were American.
Yeah.
To Gmail alone. So, okay, let's, for example, say, let's start with the first thing. Analytics products or analytics tools. Because if it wasn't for 2016's or 2015's elections where Donald Trump won the first time, I would never have heard of Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, yeah. Facebook was caught in that one.
I would have never have heard of Cambridge Analytica. So, for example, the Europeans are now championing European alternatives for popular services that you find. For Google Analytics, there are 31 alternatives. 31.
Holy cow. For Amazon, they have 12.
For Amazon's web services, now web services are basically just like, you know, internet services that you can provide.
Yeah.
There are 12 of them. A lot of them are from France. The first two are from France. Finland is the one. Switzerland is another. Gridscale, Germany. Elastics from Sweden. Ciso Cloud from the Netherlands. Eonos, I've seen Eonos before. Also mm-hmm. from Germany. And yes, so it goes on. For Gmail, 20 alternatives. Now remember, Gmail is a free email service.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you get Gmail for Business. So that means you need to have a subscription every year or every month, depending on what the plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mailbox comes from Germany. Posteo from Germany. Sovereign from the Netherlands. Proton Mail, Switzerland. Tuta Mail. No, I'm not talking about the Tuta Lenis in Namibia. This is Tuta Mail, Germany. It's literally written the first four letters of what you would find here in Namibia. T-U-T-A. Yeah. And Mail, Germany. Eclipso from Germany. Infomaniac, K-Mail from Switzerland. And what I continuously see, Helmut, is that there isn't an excuse. When we look back to what we started with at the start of our discussion for this afternoon,
mm-hmm.
there isn't an excuse for the students that we're sending to university or the people to think in an innovative scenario, to be innovative themselves. Because if the Europeans can come and say, hey, listen, you like Gmail, ne? Us, the EU,
we
can give you 20 free versions. So why must your correspondence? Because what is an email? What is an email address basically about? An email address is an electronic representation of your actual mailbox that NamPost has, ne?
Yeah,
that's your email address. So if you think about correspondence and writing and sending in correspondence to and from loved ones or for whatever particular reason, why can't we develop a free email service? Why can't we develop it, Helmut? But yet, I remember back when people were buying through Telecom, because Telecom is technically Namibia's oldest internet service provider, you would get these Telecom Namibia email addresses with your package. So mm-hmm. you buy internet, you buy a modem and everything, you get these like free Telecom email addresses. And I kept thinking to myself, really? Something you can just open up. Why? You just Google search. You just open up. Now I have to call a technician. Please set up my email account and attach it to my stuff and attach it to my Microsoft Outlook and attach it to here, attach it to there. It's weird and it's dumb and it's too much.
Very
look
ancient.
At the frown on your face, Hamut. That's literally what happened to people.
Very ancient. Well, that's the time you needed to call someone to help you, to set your email address for you.
The South Africans also did the same thing that they are still here in Namibia.
Uh-huh.
The South Africans by the name of Africa Online. They also did the same. You had an Africa Online email address as well. When you bought the internet package, you get as a freebie an email extension.
Email address, yeah.
But it doesn't make sense because you want the email. You want internet to gain access to the internet. You're not gaining access to the internet through an email. I mean, what are we doing here?
Go on. VPN.
Okay, getting to the alternatives, for example, like the VPNs, guys. Now, this was another particular thing from the journalists that went with me to Russia. They were talking about VPN, and they were talking about, Russian internet, you can't access it. And I told them, but if you have an Android, Google services are not sanctioned. They're not part of the sanctionable list of things. Mm-hmm. I could watch YouTube in Russia.
Yeah.
It's just you had the dodgy, you had Russian YouTube. You mean, you know, their content was coming up on your feed.
Yeah.
Not your regular feed that you were seeing.
And it's all coming in Russian.
And it's in Russian, and it's like, and you're like, it's what's going on? Is this how the sanctions hit? You know, it impacts your entertainment space. But you were accessing YouTube.
Yeah.
You were accessing your Google. There was also another thing that happened there specifically in Russia was I tried to log in with my Gmail,
mm-hmm.
my Gmail profile. And then I went like, whoa, don't do this, Dwight. Because what I saw in Russia,
mm-hmm.
was you couldn't convert into English.
Oh, you can't translate it.
You can't translate it into English.
It
was fixed to Russian. And then I sat there thinking, if I open this thing here, cybersecurity will go through. I will literally be experiencing Dante's Inferno. I'll be going through the 9 levels of hell, literally. Just to have peace of mind on my Android phone. And I was like, nah.
It's like, one of those days, you know, growing up playing with your father's phone and you change the language to a foreign one. Now you don't know
I was once experienced that.
No, if you didn't experience that, you didn't have a personal conversation with your father.
A near life death experience.
That
once happened.
Near
to me.
Death experience.
That was once happened to me, Hamid, when, when sometimes when you've got these lady friends who said, hey, Dwight, can I quickly make a phone, a call from your phone? You're like, okay. And you unlock your phone, you give it. But she was like in a happy mood for some. She's now currently in Germany. I hope she doesn't listen to our shows. And then I gave her my phone because I gave her a lift to a certain point.
Yeah.
And then she changed my home screen on my Android phone. And when I got my phone back, I was like, I thought you made a phone call. She said, no, I just changed things here. I was like, what is going on here? And I didn't know if I should become angry at the person, you know, because we're adults, you know, or should I just, I'm not
change
dating,
it back
I'm not mind. Dating the person, but the person is doing weird things to my phone. So we're dating. I'm like, you do this, monsieur, with your boyfriend. Don't
yeah, you do that
this with
your
me.
Mom.
So yeah, so that was the one scenario that happened. Now, personal security regarding your cyber devices or your devices is, it takes various formats. You know, a child can inadvertently, like you explained just now, change things because you were experiencing the
just
phone.
Just fooling around.
You're fooling around with the phone. And that's just what I always tell, older generations of people when they buy a new smartphone. Because older people still think that the moment they buy a smartphone, this fast smartphone must now last for 100 years. It must go through the dark ages, the ice ages, it must survive an asteroid falling into our atmosphere. It must survive various global wars, and it must still function. And that company that supports it with the software updates must still be able to operate. No. What is currently happening now is that the devices and the software updates only last maximum 3 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Maximum 3 or 2 years. Now, here's the scenario, Amun. With the VPNs were dodgy. I'll tell you now. Now, what the Europeans have, guys, for NordVPN, alternatives to NordVPN. But here's the thing. NordVPN is technically European.
Oh.
I don't know if it's Canadian or Norwegian, Helmut. Anything that is written with this name. I don't know. We can quickly look it up where NordVPN comes from. But anything written with N-O-R-D.
As in Nordic?
Usually immediately should tell any customer or consumer that this is a Scandinavian or Scandinavian based company or operator. But
thank
anyway.
God, these guys went through it.
Yeah. No, they literally went through it. So they've literally got like, what was it? Eight alternatives, but there's one from Sweden, Mulvad. There's Proton, from Switzerland, F-Secure from Finland as well. Goose from the Netherlands. I don't know where the Dutch always like weird names. There's Ziovo from Finland, IVPN from Gibraltar, OctoVPN from Norway, And yeah, and even AirVPN that even comes through it's eight alternatives that they've highlighted there. Google Maps even has eight alternatives.
Yep.
Google Maps of everyone, guys. Guess what they are? Here We Go Maps from the Netherlands. The Dutch are always optimistic about something. Then you've got Mappy.com from Czech Republic or Czechia. You've got Sigic GPS Navigation from Slovakia. Magic Earth from the Netherlands. Komoot or Komoot from Germany. TomTom Go, but TomTom is, they also make cameras. They used to make cameras and GPS devices. From the Netherlands, OSMAND, Osmand from the Netherlands, and Organic Maps from Estonia. So, the alternatives are there, and it has been happening.
Let's take a short break, and then you will come back to some of the alternatives that the EU is looking at, so this is just a list of alternatives that they are looking at in terms of alternatives to WhatsApp. Alternatives to WhatsApp too. So alternatives to X, aka Twitter, alternatives to Google Chrome, alternatives to YouTube, alternatives to LinkedIn, alternatives to Yandex. Yandex is Russian. Alternatives to Microsoft Office, alternatives to Google Calendar. They really went through the whole list. Alternatives to Zoom, Vimeo, a Google Maps platform, you have your Mapbox, but just the two main apps that we're going to go through. Oh, by the way, ChatGPT, Instagram, way at the bottom of the list, it's a alternative to Windows and alternative to Mac. Look, the biggest question here now is, do we as a continent have to, start looking at, alternatives start adopting these alternatives, or do we just sit cozy with, first of all, the first thing to look at is, the digital sovereignty that the Europeans are claiming. There is a reason, obviously, they are talking about this transition. Let's look at that transition. And the question is, are we looking at that transition? And if we are, what are we doing? Are we planning on transitioning, or we are just okay? After the break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 27 past the hour of 5. You're still with Homerun with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're looking at the tech alternative that the EU is looking at in terms of moving away from the U.S. big tech for what they claim to be their own digital sovereignty. Now, for those of us that are in Africa now, again, like the question I asked before we, you know, we went for that extended break, was what are we doing as here on the African continent? Are we going to start looking into alternatives ourselves? And one question that I just can't help asking myself is, if we were to take, for example, find some kind of digital insecurity coming out of all the platforms that we use either for, and this is all platforms that are coming out of basically all out of Africa platforms, which is basically all of them when you're talking about tech, whether they're coming from China, Japan, South Korea. This is both software and hardware, and Europe or the US. If we were to move away from those, how many alternatives would we have that are from Africa?
How much?
Let's just start with social media.
Okay, let's go to the alternatives that include social media. Where is that one about Instagram at the end?
It's way at the end. You'll find.
Wait, but WhatsApp was also social media.
Yeah, you'll find WhatsApp first.
I did not know there were five WhatsApp
alternatives.
Yeah, Olvid, Threema, which sounds dodgy. Teleguard, Jinlo Private, Skred. Yeah,
no kidding.
As long as it wasn't Telegram, because Telegram is infested with scammers. And dodgy entities.
Now, as you scroll all your way, you have your the big three somewhere in the middle there. You have X, Chrome, and YouTube, all having their own alternatives.
Yeah, but here's the thing with X. Now, X is weird, Helmut, because Mastodon. I've heard of Mastodon. My sister told me about Mastodon. Mastodon is unique. Yes, it's open source, meaning.
Oh.
But open source sometimes also does not mean that it is for free sometimes. Usually open source could be like you can see the server.
It's not proprietary.
Yeah, it's not protected by a paywall in one or other way.
So basically everyone with a tech expertise can access the source code.
Yeah, you can access the source code. But the aim of Mastodon was that it was supposed to be a rival to Twitter at the time.
How'd that go?
Obviously, Twitter was bought over by Musk, and then Elon Musk goes and tells the whole world, "Yeah, if you want your X account to be verified, you gotta pay me $10." And there were a bunch of not so intelligent individuals who went and did that just to have a blue tick next to your profile. My profile still exists. My X profile, it still exists. I still access it. And one of the threats that Elon Musk made was that if you don't give him the money, it was like a ransom threat. Pay me all. And then we all sat there. Those of us that looked at the moon like, is he really going to shoot himself in the foot? But there were actually people that went and paid, and they still have that paid subscription going every month. Now, imagine with Mastodon. So when Elon Musk was putting pressure on the Twitter founder, what was that guy's name? The guy with the beard. The Irishman, the guy from Ireland. When he was putting pressure on that guy to sell, and the board of the shareholders of Twitter, Mastodon suddenly experienced this influx of people migrating from Twitter, opening up Mastodon.
Because those that did not want the Elon Musk.
They didn't want anything to do with Elon Musk and his particular antics of being the world's richest man. He still doesn't want to acknowledge that he's technically the world's richest African. In some cases, some Africans go and give that title to Dangote. Dangote has nothing on Elon Musk, but Elon Musk refuses to acknowledge he's an African. Just saying, he's even doing African things. Just saying. If you wonder what, just go count how many children he has and how many baby mamas.
Oh, yeah, that.
That is a very African thing he's doing.
So,
very African.
Yeah.
So,
and also very South African.
What? How would... You know, you find some of those guys here in Namibia as well. That do what he's doing. And in some cases, the kids even bump into each other here in Namibia.
Look, the thing is, you can just run around when you you are still full of energy. Two of your kids will come to you.
Yeah.
One of them is pregnant.
Please, Ahmed, let's not horrify our listeners. But anyway,
please go on.
Yeah. So Mastodon exists. It still has a very, very strong presence in its own right. It's just you don't see much of it because much of the social media we are exposed to, that we also even here at Eagle FM that we promote, is the American-based social media platforms.
Yeah.
Then you get Pleroma. It doesn't say where Pleroma comes from. It also doesn't say where Mastodon is registered in. But X has two alternatives, Pleroma, which is also open source. It's also a microblogging social media platform. And it is also compatible with a specific software which Mastodon also runs on. So there's like this universal compatibility in terms of that, you know, if you wish to share things on this one platform, you want to spread it through your social media presence through all your platforms, you can do it. You get a Google Chrome. It has four alternatives. But here's the thing. Google Chrome, which is a browser,
mm-hmm.
and on the same alternative list, there was Microsoft Bing, which is also a browser / search engine situation. No, Bing is a search engine. Because Google Chrome opens up Google Search. The moment you open up Google Chrome, the default search bar that you get onto the internet is Google Search. Google Search, the browser from Google Chrome, no, Google Search, the search engine from on top of Google Chrome, the browser, is to champion the Google suite of applications. But Microsoft, Microsoft Explorer, Internet Explorer. They ended Internet Explorer, and Internet Explorer used to open up with Bing. Now, Bing would feed you American news. You know, as its news highlights, it populates your screen. Suddenly you have got these weird pop-ups happening about news out of Fox News somewhere about a school shooting happening in southern United States.
You're like, dude, I'm in Africa.
And you're like, what does that got to do with my life? What's happening over there? So the unique scenario from that was what we are continuously experiencing and continuously being exposed to is technically something you paid for. So you paid for your Microsoft, your mm-hmm. Windows on your computer, and you will automatically be exposed to American information and American media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the European alternatives for Google Chrome, which is a browser, is Vivaldi browser from Norway and Ecosia browser from Germany. But the Ecosia browser has its own search engine, the Ecosia search engine, which was in the Microsoft Bing alternatives.
Look, by the look of things, we are all going to be tech savvy after this.
No, you and I, and our listeners, definitely. We will be empowered, but we will be empowered once again in the wrong direction, Helmut, which was the hypothesis we positioned at the start of our talk.
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking for differentiation, for diversification, for positioning, for trying to step into a realm as Africans, even as Namibians,
mm-hmm.
and championing tech development.
Alternatives.
Why are we not starting with the basics? The Europeans are starting with the basics.
There are only two questions that I look. Not two questions. One question and one more of a compliment to the EU. Now, the EU is one giant market, and you have to understand that when it comes to forcing multinational to basically listen to them, they've done that before. They forced Apple to bring back, to start using the C-type charger instead of to move out from their Lightning. They basically told Apple, you'll have to get in line with everyone else, or, you lose our market. And they brought that back because, for any business person with a neuron in their head, they know that you don't want to lose the market, a market the size of the EU.
But that's not what the Americans are saying.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Okay, my question, that's the compliment. They have done this before. They have, the EU have done this before, and not just with Apple. They have, they do this even with a lot of American food companies. Mm. Because if you look at the food brands that are coming, food brands that are coming out of the US that you find in the EU, if you look at the ingredients of what you find in the EU and the ingredients of what you find in the US, they're wildly different. Mm. Because they're very strict on what should be sold in the EU. Down to the ingredient of what, to the ingredients of what's in the package.
Yeah.
So they have that market, market size, which they obviously use as leverage. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. What is their plan for smartphones? Because so far, all these things are mostly in public space, and I get that, but this is desktop work. So far, I've only heard of one operating system that's more of a Linux distro-ish that runs on cell phones. But even that is not something that is frequently used.
Nope.
Yeah.
Look, if you're tech savvy, Hamoud, and you know the risks that you're gonna take now when it comes to tech.
Yeah.
Because what's the biggest concern when you probably decide to, let me revamp the operating system of my smartphone?
Mm-hmm.
What's the first concern you'll have in your mind?
How many apps am I going to do, that I depend on a day-to-day usage, especially communication, that are going to be compatible with my new operating system?
Do you know what's the first thing?
Are there any alternatives,
Do you know what's the first thing I'll be worrying about?
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not I'll firstly lose, for example, photos.
Oh, like all the pictures. Then,
pictures and
basically
specific files that I downloaded. For example, like the reports that we sometimes read. Because I do read a lot of things on my phone as well. I don't like going through internet. Sometimes you don't know if you leave your internet on that your data is running in the background being chopped by a specific application which you didn't want to lose in the first instance. So will I lose resources that I have on my phone because of this particular migration or not?
Yeah.
And the tech-savvy guys, Hamoud, they will be comfortable. They will know.
They will.
If I do this, 100%.
The thing is, the tech-savvies are not the biggest market. The largest part of your market are the non-tech-savvy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the tech-savvy guys are niche market. They know what they want.
Yeah.
But when it comes to us, the hamsters who still have to discover what a wheel is before we actually jump on the wheel, we're the ones afraid of the wheel.
How many of your politicians are tech savvy? Because you're planning on implementing this in public space, in government offices.
Remember, Helmut, we had a minister that was scammed by a very professional voice.
And the most scary thing is a minister of defense. Very scary.
If you know who we're talking about, we apologize.
So that means if someone called and said, I'm calling from Standard Bank, give me your weapons. Bro, they've shipped all our guns to Zambezi. But the thing,
why Zambezi?
Because the guy's from Zambezi, of all places.
Oh my goodness, poor Zambezi.
Must be Fran's neighbor.
Sorry, Zambezi.
You think Francis is listening?
No, he's listening. Francis is definitely listening. But yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I would be like happy to see what the alternative of the cell phone, a cell phone software is.
Mm.
Or will be, obviously when you're talking about social media platforms like Instagram, X and all that, it's mostly mobile device based.
Yeah.
So those ones are not a problem. But if you just scroll all the way down to that list, you'll find, the two operating systems that are dominating electronic devices worldwide, especially communication devices like your laptops. Especially laptops. So you're looking at Windows and Mac OS.
Mm.
What would be the alternative of, Android is Android South Korean or American?
Android is made by Google, Hamoud.
What would be the alternative of Android and iOS?
It's the thing that, it's Harmony OS that, what's his name?
Harmony is Chinese.
Which Huawei developed. And then Xiaomi has its own OS, the Xiaomi OS. So you're already seeing two alternatives.
I don't think they are going to go Chinese.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
Because the concern... But here's the thing, Hamid, and this is where the trade policies and trade politics gets weird. You see, when Mark Carney, at the start of this year, literally after 3 January, he went to Australia in last month or in February, at the end of February, he went to Australia. And then he had to stop at one of those think tank events that they sometimes invite. You know, it's like a high profile state visit situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mark Carney stopped at a university, one of those Australian university think tank situations, and you know he was now a guest of honor, and he was those interview sessions that you have, you know, and then the interviewer asked Carney, you know, so. Because Carney came on his way to Australia, he came from India. And then he had to go to China after Australia. So he's flying in a V like this.
Mm-hmm.
So he was asked by the interviewer, so what's it like meeting Narendra Modi and talking to Modi? And then Carney sort of like put the two leaders, India, Modi and Xi, right next to each other. And he said, both leaders obviously realize that they come from very large countries with very large countries in terms of populations and also economies. And he said it's not to say that he's downplaying the Canadian economy as the Prime Minister of Canada. He's, you know, sort of like looking down on his own economy. But he says they bring a cultural perspective that European and North American politics does not have. Meaning, don't like what Donald Trump is doing, what we are seeing for the past 3 weeks now, since 28 February.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump goes and makes a speech, Helmut. Yeah, I will wipe out civilizations and X, Y, and he does speech. Those things. Ne? And then when he goes there into a room and talks to the leader of another country directly, the conversation is completely different. The tone is completely different. The substance is different. The emotion has flipped on its head 180 degrees. Now, Carney literally said, He said what Modi said, and when the first time he met Xi last year as well, he said these two leaders of these two large economies will just have one request for you, as a national leader from your country, as a respective leader, don't say things there in your public, in your country. I will do this. I will make China do this. I will make India do this. They will do this. They will say yes to my demands and our demands as Canadians. And then when we get into the meeting room, now we have to first deal with the rhetoric you said there. We first have to understand, no. Why did you say,
why the heck would you say that?
How does it impact what we're doing here? So it was a very interesting thing to see. And yes, obviously, you could see, Helmut, it's also about how international politics, specifically multilateral politics, becomes, how do I put it? It becomes a discussion of being mature about discussions, being mature about dealing with different nations, with different cultures and different identities around the world. Because the situation at the end of the Second World War is a completely different complexion than it is after the what war? After COVID. Let's make COVID our bookmark in our conversation.
Yeah.
After COVID. The complete complexion is completely different, Hamid. Right now, look at Namibia. I won't even say our country is tiny. Yes, population wise, yes, 3 million is chump change. I'm sorry, guys. But we're now having, we are hosting delegations, and every year it's just conferences left, right, and center. I have media colleagues asking, you know, do these conferences and engagements, do they mean anything, or is it just public relations over the top?
For the most part.
For the most part.
I would argue it's just public relations.
For the most part, yes, it's optics. Like Helmut has said, it's pure optics. It's grandstanding.
Yeah, it's just one giant party. Look, I like the food.
Why would you say party? But now
you're the one attending events, which is why I had to say it.
Look, I'm trying to be serious here, because I ask many of these people, for example, like last year, after the reshuffling, the major shuffles happened, and industry and trade, the ministry was split up into absorbed into two ministries. I asked the people from international relations, so how are you guys going to negotiate trade? Do you understand trade? Yeah, Ned, right? It's an interesting perspective now to have as international relations, because they need to find their feet in terms of, you know, how they approach bilateral relations with other countries. And we are seeing one such particular, if I can rather call it an engagement on steroids, because it now has sped up, is how Namibia and Russia are actually now also
coming very cozy.
Very, super cozy. But Namibia and the EU were already cozy.
A friend to all and an enemy to none.
Exactly.
Very important.
But then you have to ask the question, but now what's happening to the AFCFTA? Well,
about that.
Well, what's happening to SADC? You know, we still have our good neighbors.
Yeah.
That's where they will stay. In the neighborhood.
They're very good neighbors.
Very good. Also very quiet, but let them stay there. Don't worry. And that's where things are going, which is one of the concerns that you and I highlighted already. African countries are susceptible to first developing very good, close relations. So close that we're actually eating out of each other's kitchens, ne? With European countries and countries from Asia.
Now, you have to understand that, you know, Ubuntu, you know, I am because you are. We eat together, except for when we steal money, then we don't eat together. But outside of that.
You just had to bring an ACC in there.
I know, right?
We had to find a way to bring ACC into the talk.
Just rob them in there.
ACC didn't even ask for that.
Nope.
Actually, we've got to send them an invoice, Hamut, because we keep mentioning their name so much.
I know, right?
Yeah,
give
so...
free market.
Yeah, so... that particular unique talk, you're right. I mean, things go look weird. We literally eat out of the kitchen, out of the EU, but... We tell South Africa, hey, listen, brah, just, you know, I'll send you the invoice next month, ne? And then the South Africans are like, an invoice for what? You know, for eating from your kitchen. You have to pay me for eating there, you know? So, that's where we find ourselves. But before we actually continue, guys, we quickly take a live read, and then we come back right after this. The Avicii University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Admission requirements are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must also be registered as a nurse or a midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the HPCNA. Candidates must have minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery will be full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406, Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Yeah.
I found something you'll find interesting, and that's different African countries seems to have been making headways into building softwares.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now this is like a not just your Hello World type of a thing. This is an operating system type of type level. Ghana is, there's some type of an operating system that I found that it's called Anansi, and it's attributed to Ghana. And now Anansi, this is in reference to the
spider god.
The spider god, yeah.
Why would you name something a spider deity?
Well, we learned out of Thor, and for Thursday.
But Thor is not a.
And
he's not a
Odin for Odin Wednesday. Well, we're just renaming things. We're just pulling names out of folklore, mythological world, and giving them names.
Because the Africans are how Christian, Helmut.
Really?
They are super Christian.
Super Christian?
Well, you know.
In theory, yeah. In practice,
You see them. You see them. I mean, we've got one colleague who's willing to lay down the gospel with in the office, but yeah.
That's Dwight. Now,
I'm only speaking facts. I can't speak about anything else.
No, okay, there's, the Cold War, now that, you know, this is not Cold War, Cold War. This was, there's a sailfish, now a sailfish, it's a type of an operating system that's, it's Linux based, but, this specific one, I'm not sure if there's the same, Sailfish operating system, which is also Linux based that I know, but it's attributed to, to the BRICS nations.
Yeah.
I think it's something that they've been working on for, you know, as a part of the digital sovereignty. Then you have, Anansi, which is something that is attributed to Ghana. And, developed by a gentleman, I'm going to say, yeah. This is Randolph Awusu, a CEO of OSIS Websoft, a company he created when he was just 21. Now, this article is coming from Medium and was put out in 2017. This is a company that he created in 21 and the first of its kind from Africa and web from Africa, and is a web browser. It's a web browser, not an operating system. Now, the operating system, or more like KaiOS is a mobile Linux distribution for keyboard-based mobile phones, and is designed and optimized for affordable and low-power features. I mean, Linux is known for that. It was written in just a bunch of languages, and it's coming out of, it's also attributed to Africa in terms of its development. Here's the thing, but when you look at where it's coming from, its history, it's taking you to Hong Kong.
Wow.
I know. Look.
Why was my sneaky suspicion there would be Asian roots there? Just like Transion.
The thing is, I'm looking for something that's genuinely African in terms of of software and hardware, and it's very hard to find.
Yeah, it is. It is, Helmut, because not even the South Africans are willing to take on this big task of trying to fill the gap. Because if the South Africans do, because I can clearly tell anyone right now, South African education is two steps up above us. Definitely, even Zimbabwean education systems.
Yeah, definitely. Throw Botswana in that bucket.
Throw Botswana also in there. We do face a problem, Helmut. Because the question is, how do we achieve the innovation that we see on TV, we read about, we interact with on a daily basis? How do we get to the innovation side of things? And I'm not talking about, we were supposed to elevate the dreams of the toy, the life-size toy plane. On right next to ECN. We were supposed to take that guy's dreams to the next level.
First of all, we were supposed to take that plane to Ministry of Mines. Now, I don't know what it's doing at the ECN. I know it's becoming a song at this point, but why ECN?
Why Ministry of Mines?
Huh?
Why Mines?
Okay, well, which ministry has industrialization to its name?
It was there before the split of MIT.
Okay, where's industrialization now?
With Mines now. But we're almost now in 2026.
Uh-huh.
That plane was made in 2022 when industrialization and trade still existed.
Just find a ministry that has the industrialization directory, or the ministry where industrialization is a directory that they have under them, and then just so that it can be. Look, for me, that will show that we are proud of our innovation. And, everyone that visits the ministry will tell them, well, one of those projects we are working on. And it's, okay, now I get why it's at ECN. But look, the point.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah. One thing that I totally, one thing that, a lot of people, that they, at least people that read up a lot on science, will tell you is that a lot of advancements don't come from the mainstream platform of that discipline. One example that was given by one ecologist, I just forgot that guy's name, is that, you know, a lot of scientific breakthroughs come out of the fringes, not the center of the scientific discipline. The example that he gave was that, you know, candle makers did not come up with the electric light bulb idea because they were so comfortable with making candles. That was their business model. They knew if they come up with an alternative, they'd be put out of business. Why would they think outside the box? It's people at the fringes. Those are the people that think outside the box. So now, which is why when you look at the model airplane we have at this still unbelievable at Isian, it's what is missing? What's missing is the exposure. Obviously, you know, that for me shows that someone has a passion. Mm. And that passion, it's, you know, seems to be, well, aviation. And which, believe me, it's not easy to get in. Because you are dealing with forces of nature. That will not forgive you. If it's, you know, 10 kilometers, you know, above the ground and everything goes, you know, well, goes faulty, mm. that thing is going to hit the ground at 300 kilometers an hour, mm. Full of 200 people. So it's the exposure of basically how the, you know, the aviation industry works. What are the rules? And, you know, just how many parts are you looking at, you know, per single part, like an engine, for example. You know, if you just throw someone who is interested in that discipline, they will just go in head first and you will make a very productive individual out of them. When the exposure is not there, it becomes wasted potential. Commercial break.
Get so much more.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg crystal gold parboiled rice, only $29.99. 2.5 kg best choice pure white sugar, just $49.99. And 5 kg top score super maize meal for a low $62.99. Deals valid until 19 April 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back at 6 o'clock on the dot. And, of course, that brings us to the end of Home Run, and which basically still leaves a lot of questions unanswered. And one of them being, if Africa was to look at alternatives for the continent's digital sovereignty, how many options would we have that will be coming from within Africa? So this sounds like a, you know, an interesting direction that things are taking tech-wise for, you know, for those that are in the tech-related disciplines, you know, on the African continent. But, of course, all these things that, you know, they're talking about different alternatives, they already have existing digital infrastructure, which they can just revamp, or they can decide to build one from, you know, from the ground up. But what's the first thing that will be required, after expertise? The money.
Yeah.
Investment into research and development.
Yep.
And Africa is not very good at that.
Yep. And especially our particular economy itself as Namibia. I mean, we have to pick it up, Helmut, because one of the downsides after we did the discussion on the European research and development discussion.
Africa, EU, or Namibia EU Research and Development Collabo?
Well, it was more in an Africa spirit, but it was localized to Namibia, where, I mean, if that one event had most of Namibia's top academics from Namibia's universities present,
yeah.
Who's Who's busy teaching or lecturing at the universities?
That's the point you made. That
who's busy lecturing?
We have a lot of experts in a lot of different disciplines that are in managerial positions.
Yeah, it's one of the other.
They're into management, like.
It's one of the other concerns. The other serious factor is also, for example, people love talking about what's currently happening there in that Iran war. If one person is assassinated by the Americans or the Israelis on the Iranian side,
mm-hmm.
someone of equal or better caliber takes that guy's place.
Yeah. Oh, the Iranians have been... Have
now, imagine to yourself if we potentially lose one physicist in Namibia.
First question is, do we have one?
Yeah, I've counted so far three. No, four. Boy. But the one is an astrophysicist, two of them are nuclear, so we need more physicists.
No, David will take over.
David is busy giving us his sign language.
Thank you.
Telling us to vacate, but yeah. So, yeah, we research and development is our biggest unfortunate weakness.
Interesting. The science and technology initiative based on research and development was held in Niamey, Niger.
Mm.
And it was held as a side event to the main event. And you know what? Now, our minister of ICT, Emma Tefeles, I think she was the deputy minister at the time. She also attended that event.
Mm.
And one thing that a lot of people, there's one gentleman from, I think, African Development Bank, UNESCO, and also the current Minister of Information and Communication Technology, when she was deputy at the time.
Mm.
They all gave a lot of speeches, but one thing all their speeches have in common is, we need more money in this avenue.
True. Yeah, but on that note, guys, tomorrow. Let's see each other again, same time, same place. Alternatively, stay tuned for David.
Yeah, and also move that plane to Ministry of Mines and Energy.